I'll bring you some environmental news stories. Hello, I'm Erin Bopp, and I'm happy to be here with you tonight. The first headline is Athabasca's Chippewa First Nation in northern Alberta, Canada, is engaging in a legal battle with the Canadian government. This is due to the government's complete disregard of the treaty that requires their consultation prior to the changing or addition of any policy that affects their land or ability to live in accordance to their tradition. Some of the life-threatening consequences the community in Fort Chippewa has experienced are an explosion of cancer rates, the death of wildlife on land and in water, ever since Shell Oil Company began its Jackpine mine project expansion upstream from their lands. Adding to this fight is Neil Young, who had a four-date Honor the Treaties tour, the last show being just yesterday in Calgary with special guest Diana Krall. On this tour, he was speaking out in support of Athabasca Chippewa in their fight, with proceeds collected going to their defense fund to fight the Canadian government's support of Shell Oil's expansion. Have you heard of the TPP? It stands for the Trans-Pacific Partnership. 350.org is a global grassroots network building a movement to solve the climate crisis. Phil Aranyonu from 350.org warns us about the TPP. The TPP is an expansive, highly secretive international free trade agreement. The TPP would empower corporations to directly sue governments over laws and policy that they claim reduce their profits. Legislation designed to address climate change, curb fossil fuel expansion, and reduce air pollution could all be subject to attack as a result of the TPP. The countries involved in this potential free trade agreement make up 40% of the global GDP. The TPP will negatively affect laws and regulations that protect not just the environment, but also medicines, media, and agriculture, to name a few. To learn more about 350.org and environmental issues that we cover here on Eco Radio, check out the links we post on our Facebook page for Eco Radio KC. I'd like to say an update about the West Virginia chemical spill. Freedom Industries leaked 7,500 gallons of crude MCHM into the Elk River, rendering at least 300,000 people without clean and safe tap water. DemocracyNow.org printed a story on January 14th sharing that the drinking water ban had been lifted just 5 days after the spill. So the Washington Post today printed this quote. So sketchy is the public health system's understanding of the chemical's toxicity that officials wound up backtracking on whether it was safe for everyone to start drinking water again after the do-not-use order was lifted in West Virginia last week. End quote. These are the news headlines.
Okay, this is Richard Mabia, and first of all, I want to take the time to welcome Erin Bopp to our show. This was her first night doing it, first time presenting the news. And I'm telling you, folks, I'm very proud of her because, you know, we don't do a whole lot as far as your on-the-job training around here. It's kind of like we give you a pad and a pencil and tell you what you're supposed to do, and the next time we see you, it's showtime. So, you know, if you don't have the ability to take the initiative to make things happen on your own, you're in loads of trouble. So I'm not going to say a whole lot about her because I'm going to wait till I come back on the next time before I blow her up. And then when I come back in, I'll tell you all about it. I'll tell you what part of town she's from and the kind of stuff she's doing. But for now, I just want to know that we really appreciate her being here. And y'all get used to hearing her voice out there. She'll be back on at the end of the show with the calendar. Now you'll all know we're dealing with a raw talent. All right, gang, I'm here. First of all, I want to say happy Martin Luther King Day, Celebration Day. It's been that all over town, and it's been quite a day. Normally, I haven't been to a Martin Luther King Day celebration in a long time because usually I'm always busy doing something. You know, that's the kind of life that I live. But this year, Fuscari, those of you who don't know, Fuscari is my better half, started pestering me about she wanted to go. And last night we was at another function I'll tell you about in a second. And they talked about it, so I didn't have an excuse anymore, so we had to go. But I had a really good time. It was a very good show. I was very impressed with the way it was laid out. They had one of my more enjoyable moments was when they had some a kiddie college. A kiddie college performed, and they recited Martin Luther King's speech, the main ones, you know, and one day I'm a black guy and a white guy and all that kind of stuff. These kids, the oldest one was first grade, and the youngest one was preschool, and there was probably a total maybe about eight kids, and they would recite certain parts of it. I mean, they did an awesome job. It brought tears to my eyes. Because it brought tears to my eyes because they're black. And I'm sitting there going, they're reciting this and repeating this. And oh, how nice it would be when they got to be my age if, in fact, some of that stuff had been accomplished. And, of course, that brought the tears because of realizing how hard we've all have struggled to accomplish that, and we still have an uphill battle. But it was beautiful. The speaker was beautiful. Seeing all the people, it was a gorgeous occasion, and I enjoyed being there. They had praise dancers, and they had lots of music, and people enjoyed themselves and had a ball. So I'm glad I went, and so that's that for that. Last night, I attended an 80-year-old activist's birthday party, black activist. And I just want to say, first of all, before I went to the party, when I was at church yesterday morning, I was telling people that I think 80 years old is a milestone. And any American that actually has the ability and a chance to live to be 80 years old deserves a celebration. And I'm passing along to you. We need to look out for our 80-year-old Americans. I mean, making it to 90, that's a whole nother story and another milestone that deserves recognition. But used to be back in the day, I can remember growing up, a person made 70 and you was thinking that they had reached some kind of milestone. Now 70 is just a drop in the bucket. 80 years old is due some type of credit. And this guy was 80 years, he was the first black elected official in Wyandotte County. His name is Robert Milan. I don't mind saying his name on there. And I'm telling you what, I was honored to be there with him and be a part of that function last night. And if God so blesses me to live to be 80 years old, all of you out there owe me one. You got that? All right, this is where we get ready to talk about the holiday. What I'm going to do... First of all, you know when I'm on the air, you can call and talk to me. Tonight, it's about Martin Luther King's celebration and the environmental movement. How what he represented can be represented in this movement. Okay, that's my thing. That's what you call in for. The number is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. One other note, I may have a surprise around 6:30. I had a guy this morning that sent me some information about a program going on out there in America. It's going on around the world, around the planet. It has to do with benefiting poor folks and helping poor folks and money being made available to do it and the whole bit. And so I was going to come on to talk about it, and I told him, and then he wanted to know how could he listen in. And I said, well, if he could listen in, he could also call in. So the way we got it set up right now, if this works out, he's on the line by 6:30. I'll tell him to give us a call. And if he does, I'm going to let him be the one to actually talk about this with us. So that's just a little treat for you. Okay, what I'm going to talk about is where we are environmentally in America and this Martin Luther King bit. This morning, if none of you saw it, I suggest you check out this all of the different blurbs that's going on the internet about this New Yorker story on Obama, the one where the editor of the New Yorker sat down and had a up close and personal conversation with him. You know, one of them guys that from time to time he allows a reporter to have. This is the one, if you heard bits and pieces on it, with different topics and subjects he's talked about. I saw that this morning. I started making copies of it. because I was going to be able to talk about it when I got here. And, of course, I got hung up at the Martin Luther King Day celebration and a subsequent meeting that went on afterwards. And by the time I realized what time it was, I looked up and it was 5:20. So not only am I here, Fuscari's here, my dog's been locked up in the house all day. And so, and I had left all of my material at home. So I'm not winging it because I don't have to wing it. But some of the stuff that I wanted to bring, I don't have. The reason that I'm starting this out about Obama is because Obama going in the office. And well, first of all, the New Yorker guy was saying, I heard him on Good Morning Joe this morning. And basically he's saying Obama can see the lame duck period of his presidency ahead of him. He can see it. And when you get to the point that you can see it, one, you get a little bit more relaxed in your comments. You don't hold back as much as you have before. And secondly, you start visualizing your legacy, the thing that you, when you took office, wanted to accomplish that you think now you might not be able to accomplish. And so that's kind of where he is. He kind of, the guy who wrote the article kind of felt like he was. And the reason that was important for me is because when Obama came on the scene is about the time that I was getting exposed and interested in the environmental movement. So when we talked 2006-07, he got elected in 2008. So, you know, it was full blown in 2008. So I went back to that era because Obama was and has been our first and maybe only environmental president. And so just like he's looking at the handwriting on the wall of the things he hasn't been able to accomplish, here we are as environmentalists, at least I am as an environmentalist, being concerned about the things that we had expected we would accomplish, but today have not. So I thought I'd flash back a little bit on my experience of getting involved. And that started in 2008 in April the 4th, 2008. An unknown person in this town who was working with an organization, not this town, in this country, who's working at an organization called Green for All, scheduled a conference called the Dream Reborn in Memphis, Tennessee, on the 40th anniversary of King's death. I don't know if you can call it death an anniversary, but on the 40th year after King's death. So he was planning, Van Jones, this celebration. I heard about it, and since they had heard of me, they contacted me and asked me to go. And I also had got them to take a close friend of mine, Sherry Green. So we jumped in the car and drove down to Memphis for the weekend. That was the beginning of me establishing myself on a national level in the environmental movement. Some of the information that I received that weekend still remains embedded in my mind. That was when everything was a must, a go. We were so excited. The stimulus money was going to be coming. If the guy, he wasn't even elected, but we knew that that was coming. George Bush was still president then. So the connection was on that. They had posters of King and recycling, and the whole bit was out there. So they were tying the environmental movement into King's dream as far as jobs, and also Van Jones was very responsible for teaching me the term pathway out of poverty. That's where all that got started. And you know, and getting out of poverty was one of Martin Luther King's main objectives when he was dealing with this country, working to find better jobs. I think I heard today that at one of the Martin Luther King celebrations, they were trying to discuss the minimum wage issue. When you think about all the circumstances that we find ourselves faced with today, you can see how that was really important back there going to his 40th year of his death. and beginning this environmental movement from there. There were people there from all over the country. I think it was something like maybe 3,000-4,000 young people. Young people. That was the one thing about Van Jones and the Green for All move. They concentrated on college students. I never forget because the entertainment was all hip hop. And Sherry and I, you know, we are elder statesmen. So, and everybody was talking about, I remember I had a roommate, you know, a guy from San Francisco. He was, you know how they do on them conferences when they pay for you. They also hook you up with your roommates and stuff. And he was from somewhere like San Francisco working with migrant workers or something. And all he could talk about was the party they was going to that night. You know, they was having big parties in the place where we were staying with each other, getting to meet each other, which was really cool. Just that it was a hip-hop scene, and for her and I, we didn't think that was some place we would fit in. In fact, we didn't want to fit in. So we got in the car and went over in town and found a juke joint. You know how it is when you're our age. So we found something to do, but it wasn't out there with the hip-hoppers. But you can't help but think back to that, and I started thinking on, well, where are we in the environmental movement? Just like that legacy of Obama can see the handwriting on the wall. Where are we? Green collar jobs? Anybody out there see any green collar jobs going on in your neighborhood? I really like to know about them. I keep hearing comments that a lot of employers are saying that they can't find people qualified to work on their jobs. I think those are some of the technical jobs or whatever. But I don't know of any green collar job training programs that's going on in this city. I know that they have some schools that are teaching skills that are associated with green collar jobs, but I don't know of any on-the-job training where people are getting paid to learn to work. So that's one of the main ingredients of a pathway out of poverty that never materialized. And I think that that's something that we would always look back on during this Obama era. And wonder what happened. Now, of course, I noticed in one of the articles that they had in the magazine, again, now if you're going to call in and talk to me, that's 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. I noticed in one of the conversations Obama had, they asked him a question about race. And for the first time, he spoke up and said that he did think that some of the reasons that he had lost votes or got low ratings or wasn't getting things passed had to do with some white people that just particularly didn't like the fact of having a black president. But then again, to keep it from being like he's racist or anything, he said, but there also were some black people who also found problems with him being a president and not catering to their needs too. So he tried to play both sides of the street, which is a typical thing for a person that's in politics to do. I hear he's been getting blasted by the right saying that he played the race card, and I'm not for sure what the black side is saying. When I left this morning, I hadn't had a chance to hear anything. But the point about it, that again could have had a lot to do with the fact that the funds being made available for the green collar jobs got frozen. Now, I wanted to spend some time today and look on the internet and find out what happened to the green zone. But I was informed last week, the end of the week, at least I got it as a rumor, that the green zone in Kansas City, Missouri is getting ready to become defunct. I don't know about that. So if anybody out there knows about that, I would really appreciate you calling and telling me what happened. Like I said, I was going to look it up, but because I got stuck, I don't want to stay stuck because that's negative, because I got so wrapped up and involved in the activity of the day, I didn't get a chance to do that. The reason I'm saying that's important is because, see, that's where a lot of stimulus money came into this city to benefit our low-income communities. And a lot of money was spent. But if we don't have, and I don't know of a sustainable program that was created, people, that's my main concern about the environmental movement. I know it sounds like if the last three shows that I've been on here, it's been like I've been bitching about something. I hope that's not one of them seven words. But I swear, I just don't understand why sustainability has not been a byproduct of our efforts. I mean, I can understand the opponents in D.C. complaining about always wanting to spend money, because they don't see nothing good coming out of it. I mean, we go through money. And I keep saying that, man. Here's a black guy sitting up complaining about the organization just going through money with no sustainability. That is my main concern. If a person from a certain side of town walks into a store and robs it, people in that store become paranoid of people who live on that side of town. So, when you have a program, an organization that receives government funding, that takes that funding and spends it, and do not create sustainability, and reaches a point that if they can't get more government funding, the program goes bust. That causes people not to want to fund, use government money to fund programs in our most disadvantaged neighborhoods. So we can't continue to sit by as the American public and allow organizations to do what they want to do, when they want to do it, and how they want to do it, without having any accountability. I'm not picking on the Green Zone. Please don't hear me doing that, because what happened to them is similar to what happens to all of our programs, especially in the inner city. It's time for us to rethink what we are doing. If a program does not end in a job, then we shouldn't have it as a program, because sustainability comes when a job is associated with the training or whatever it is you receive. We spend lots of money. Now, I know that. There's no doubt in my mind. We have a workforce partnership in this city, in this country, that gets a budget that's designed to take people who are unemployed or who have lost their jobs and teach them new skills. I think they have a program that pays them actual dollars for a whole year. And those programs have been active. But if we don't have a job at the end of the year, I'm back in the city, folks. You know what you're doing? You telling them folks in the city, there's no sense in me doing it. They're not getting no job. So they don't wake up every day looking for a job. They're sitting around and they become those people that those folks who are against giving money to government agencies talk about all the time. Lazy, don't want to work kind of people. But we have a lot to do by these programs failing in creating that type of atmosphere. All right, now, again, that goes hand in hand with where Obama is starting to see himself as he's getting ready to leave office, at least based on the New Yorker. I'm sure you got people that will say that's not true. That's the nature of us. We're always ready to attack and attack and attack. But I bet you I don't hear those same people who would attack me behind what I'm saying right now saying a word about programs going out without accomplishing what they were designed to accomplish. So again, as we continue to look into the future, we need to make sure we have someone out here that's seeking more accountability from the people that are running this. That number is 816-931-5534. I got about 6 minutes before it's getting close to the time for me to ask my secret guest to call in. So if you're out there, Tom, and you're listening in, get yourself ready. Get prepared to make that call in here. We're going to take a break here in a minute. And when I do, that'll give you a chance to call. There's someone on the line. Hold on just a second, Yay. Okay, that's caller. You're on the air. Can you give me your first name and the part of the city you're calling from?
Yes, my name is John, and I am in the inner city. Let's just say Slope Parkway by the tennis court.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, what you're saying is extremely accurate. However, we must understand that those people that vote for those things that will give a trickle of money also said it so that they know that they can cut it off and make it fail. It's not that people aren't trying to make it work, but people are trying very hard to make it work. However, 1 or 2 years cannot provide viable sustainability. We need long-term things because we are dealing with long-term problems. Some of these problems are over 80 years old.
Right. Okay, I'm in agreement with you, okay? I'm in agreement with you 100%, and I don't want to give the impression by no means that the people involved in these programs haven't done the best they can do with what they got to work with. I agree with you.
Oh, they have.
I agree with you. I'm saying when we initiate, that's why I'm saying I'm calling almost in every group that I talk to now. I was just in one before I came here, and I'm calling for us to come back to the table. I'm calling for us to start bringing in people who have skills in specific areas, and let's get around this table because we got to redesign our objectives, okay? And one of the things that I'm saying, you know, all I am is a mouth that roared, and I bring people together. But all I'm saying, if a program doesn't end with a job, then we shouldn't have it. Because that's the only way. I mean, the type of job that's going to create an income, not only for the person that's working, but also one that's going to create an income that can turn around and refinance that program. Now, okay, now I know you go, well, okay, that's kind of hard to do. Man, look here. Give me a warehouse sitting down in Fairfax, down in the bottom, that has contract with companies to be a distributor for their product in the Midwest. I can have young men who don't even have any kind of working skills learning how to work a forklift. I can have young people in community colleges become salesperson. Let me get Russell Simmons clothes in a warehouse in Kansas City, and I got a youngster that can go up to Nebraska to the college to try to sell the college bookstore to hold Russell Simmons clothes. Or go to Oklahoma. There's so many different directions you can go. That's the kind of wit that needs to be at those tables where these programs are being considered. Because if we don't start finding and building programs that will pay for themselves, we'll continuously be sticking our hand out to that federal government. And all they doing with that, just like Obama said, as long as we black in this country, there's going to be a group of people that don't want to go along with the program just because of our skin color. But if we able to create some type of economics out of it, sustainability can be an issue.
Yeah, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. However, three points. Number one, when they throw out that money, and it's like a throwout, it's like a handout, they put so many specific restrictions on it that you almost can't do anything. You almost can't get it.
Right.
Number two, we got to talk with the guys like Russell Simmons, like Kanye West,
right,
like Jay-Z, and on, and have them say, look, I will search for people like you are talking about, so we will work with them and help build our communities. And thirdly, we have to quit looking at some of our people like, damn, I don't want them around.
Yeah.
And, pardon my French, but that's how it is.
Well,
we have to look at them like they are down and out, and we need to help bring them up. Quit being the crab. Be the one who reaches down and pull them up.
Well, brother, I tell you what, I'm going to have to let you go now because I got to take a break. But I think you and I are on the same page. I really appreciate you calling in. I don't know how often you listen to this show, but stay tuned. And you can always, I really like for you to call in because we can talk. Okay, brother?
All right.
All right. Take care, man. Happy New Year's. All right, gang, we're going to take a break here. And Tom, if you're out there, brother, call in. I'm wanting you to call in now. Okay.
This week, it's a special rebroadcast of one of my favorite interviews on Interfaith Voices, a conversation on wisdom and aging with Sister Joan Chittister.
We don't have 30% of our life in some sort of stand-up position, half dead. We have 30% of life left to live.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before the Jazz Disciple.
Tune in Wednesday at noon here on KKFI and hear Isaac Wilder, who will describe the efforts to decentralize the Internet by creating a non-corporate, independent, peer-to-peer network. He's the executive director of the Free Network Foundation and instrumental in bringing Internet service to the Occupy Wall Street movement. We're going to hear cutting-edge news about the Internet this Wednesday at noon, again, on the All Souls Forum.
This week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
The experience that we have is always reflected in the idea that the land itself loves us.
I'm Neil Harvey. Please join us this week when our guests will be Jeanette Armstrong, Dennis Martinez, and Enrique Salmon. It's the Indigenous Compact of Kinship on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
Friday morning at 9:30, right after Between the Lines.
Okay, gang, I'm back. My guy hasn't called in yet, so we winging it for a minute or two. But while I was talking about the Green Zone, Mike here, the production manager, looked it up, and he's going to read some of the information on it just for those who are like me who hadn't even heard this, just to kind of bring us up to date on what was going on. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I don't have any really – I haven't found anything that corroborates what you heard about – them rolling up the carpets or whatever, but just, and this is, I'm reading this on greenimpactzone.org, which is by, is a site, I guess, maintained by MARC, the Mid-American Regional Council. And so what they're saying, I mean, there's a lot of things of what their strategies have been. And so with regard to employment, they're saying a job pipeline offering regular updates on available jobs with 627 participants. That's one bullet point. Next one, 8 essential employability skills workshops with 133 graduates. They've had 6 interview fairs, and they've had 151 job placements. Now, with regard to job training, they've had 435 training referrals and 395 training certifications in deconstruction basics, environmental remediation, construction business management, small business planning, OSHA 10, and customer service and certified nursing assistant programs. So those are a couple of the things that they're citing on their site, and I'm continuing to look to see if there's any present tense.
And like I said, this is not my intent, please, you all. To I'm not complaining because I've been there. And I know how difficult it is to make things work. I have also made my comments known even to EPA. I think the grants that they put out, you need to be an English literature major to fill them out. You know, and I agree with the brother that just called in about the hoops they make you jump through. It's ridiculous. You know, and yes, and what happens, you start getting organizations that start doing exactly what Mike just read, listing all of these fabulous things that these organizations are doing. You know, how many people they talk to. It's all about numbers, man. It's all about numbers. I got people right now that go out of their way to get me at a meeting because if they're able to turn in a number on how many people they had at a meeting, that makes them look good on paper. Some folks get paid based on the amount of people that show up at a dadgum meeting. So I'm saying it all becomes a paperwork thing, but not a real entity because, see, real people, they deal with real stuff. You know, I mean, if you got a job for me, I mean, the biggest insult I got right now is the one guy they put in the Kansas City Star as a poster boy for the programs going on in that Green Zone area. It don't have a job now. He's out of work. And they talk, he was going around installing smart meters in people's homes. I mean, and you know, I'm thinking if you were able to get to the point that you had some installation talent, there ought to be someplace around here you could get a job. But see, it's like I remember once when I was in college and was discussing what it was to go to school on a scholarship. Those coaches will use you to death, you know, until your scholarship runs out or you reach a point of you no more value to the team. And then they pretty much just cut you loose, brother. I mean, it's like you're putting a cow out the pasture. You just stay out there on your own, you know. And they really don't put any interest in you. They don't care about what classes you're taking. They don't care about where you're going from here. They don't care about what's going to happen to you in your life. They don't prepare you for life. They only want you for one reason, and that's to make their job look good. And that's what's happening out here in our organization. Sorry, folks. I have to, you know, have to pressure and hit it like hit the nail on the head. You may not like it, but again, they tell me the KKFI is supposed to present the side that nobody else presents. I'm not privileged to being inside these meetings with these organizations to understand and know what their theme and theory was for enacting some type of process that they decided to use. But I'll tell you what, we had a environmental conference for the last 5 years instead of these last, this last one, the last one was in 2012. And we did that conference by people themselves contributing funds to make it happen. And I'm not going to mention any names, but one of them was just mentioning when Mike was reading that stuff, and the most I got out of them in 5 years was $100. They contributed no money to a people program, but they receive hundreds of thousands of dollars from government money. It doesn't make any sense. I'm sitting and watching low-income people hurting. I'm not talking about your gangbangers and the idiots that don't have nothing else to do but sit around and get high and run up and down the streets and act like fools. I'm talking about people out here that are truly trying to make it. If you, any of you had went to that strike that the fast food people had, you would have seen and met those people that are truly trying to make it. I think on $7 and something an hour. It's pathetic. Okay, so here we are trying to figure out ways to benefit them folks. We're not asking you to give them nothing. We just want to be in a position to create a type of system that's going to help them reach a point that they can start finding some sustainability in their life. And we get rejected. But others, with all of these fancy-looking programs, are the ones we have to sit and watch. You know, it's like I have the, that's what the one song, I who have nothing, adore you and love you so. I'm just a no one with nothing to give you, but oh, I love you. That's kind of where we are with what's going on in society. You can take me any place you want to fancy clubs and restaurants, but I can only watch you with my nose pressed up against the window pane. So we have to sit by and watch our women and children with a nose pressed up against the window panes while the heavy players are sitting back living in luxury, eating off fine wine, drinking fine wine and eating off of good linen. And I'm just saying, enough is enough. Someone has to address the point that there are things we can do. I threw out that little thing while I go to my guy about the warehouse thing. I've had that in my mind for the longest because I drive across inner city Viaduct all the time, and I know we got all the warehouses down there, and I see Fairfax over there. They got all kind of spaces for warehouse. And you notice he even chimed in and said, yeah, it would be cool if somebody could go out. We don't have anybody going talking to nobody. What we have is a bunch of fat cats sitting up in office buildings downtown Kansas City, Missouri, looking at them federal budgets and making a determination how they can spend the dollars on those federal budgets. They're not even really spending a lot of time finding matching monies. I guarantee you, they have not reached that. First of all, they don't know how. They wouldn't even know how to go talk to them. If they did find somebody to go talk to them, it'd be one of those fat cats to hang out with them, thinking that they're going to be able to go and make some sense to them. There's a missing link out here, people, and it has to be that the people who can truly benefit and help those folks that need to be helped are not being talked to. Now, I know a lot of you out there know what I'm saying, because a lot of you are like me, and you know we're not being talked to. We sit and we watch, but we're not being talked to. No one's asking us our opinion. No one. I didn't get to go to the session that Maurice talked about. I don't know if I was was out in Independence, but I found out that they had 119 people there, and I want to thank the folks that showed up. That was fantastic. An unbelievable crowd of people to have a community conversation. You can't beat that. That's the greatest thing in the world. Now, I did go to one that Maurice had out there at off 105th Street at the IBEW Hall. It was packed. I could not believe how many people was there, black, white, Hispanic. I mean, they're there. They up asking questions. I mean, that's what's needed, man. I mean, I'm telling you, people out here have had it. They want to be heard. They're not trying to overthrow America, overthrow the world. They want to work. They want us all to come around that table and work together. So that's what I hear going on. So all I'm saying, and again, we are in a position where we're getting ready to go into another year of dealing with the environmental movement. Those of us who are out here on the front line, trying to make these things work, need your help. We want you to step up to the plate. Help us out. Give us a hand. I'm not for sure if I got the call coming in now. Okay, I got a caller on the line. Caller, you on the air. Will you give me your first name and where you're calling from, please?
Yes, my name is Anthony.
Hey, what's up, Anthony?
Hi, how you doing?
You got it.
You really hit a point today when you were talking about these nonprofit organizations who talk the talk but don't walk the walk. And there's one right there on the corner, 18th and Paseo, that has a lot of training for people. But when it comes down to getting those jobs, after all the training is done, there's no jobs to be found.
Yes, sir. You know, Anthony, what gets me is why can you and I see that, but others don't? Other people in authority don't. You know what I mean? Authoritative people drive past that place every day.
And you know the place I'm talking about, right?
Yeah,
I
know what it is.
I don't know if I should put their name out.
That's all right. You ain't got to put the name out. We're not going to pinpoint an entity. We're talking about the process, okay?
Okay, that's fine.
Just the process. Because, see, here's the deal, brother. On those type of jobs, the only people getting paid on them training jobs are the people doing the training.
That's right.
Okay, they go out of their way to find trainee money. They'll go bust their behinds talking to businesses to do their training.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the job that they have out there after all the training is done for one of these companies that's helped sponsoring this, there's only one or two jobs.
That's
and
right.
And you're training 80 or 90 people.
Yeah, I cover the board on every group I talk about, and one of the groups that I just think is utterly ridiculous is our prisoners. And we get somebody on parole, and their parole officer tell them to get a job. Well, okay,
yeah.
The dude said, well, I can't find no job. Ain't nobody hiring. That ain't hiring prisoners. I mean, ex-cons. So they say, well, I hear they're having a job out at some factory out here in Lee Summit. Here's a sheet. Take this sheet, and I want you to show up for that job. I hear they're going to hire 50 people. So the person takes the sheet. He shows up. There's 3,000 people out there standing in line. A third of them, all of them, come from parole officers, because every parole officer in town told this person to go out there and get in line. They're going to hire 50 people, and usually those 50 people end up being relatives of the people who work there.
Exactly. Pedralism. You said it right.
Okay.
It is.
But the problem I'm saying, brother, you know when they talk about lack of representation?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any representation. I'm not asking them to go out of their way and change what they're doing. Man, you can live your life the way you want to live your life. Stop misleading my people. You know, I was at the thing today at the Martin Luther King celebration, and the thing that this one pastor kept preaching, kept saying, telling Moses, saying, God telling Moses to go tell Pharaoh, let my people go. Stop injuring the mentality of our people. I mean, if you don't have a job, you don't have a job. We can handle that. I can, okay. But don't mislead me into getting in my car, getting on a bus, driving all the way across town, standing in a line in all kind of weather, 3,000 people for 50 jobs, and you've already given the jobs away?
The jobs are already given away before the process even starts.
Before it starts. That's right.
That's right.
So all I'm saying, give us a break. You know, let us try to figure out some other way that we can find some type of sustainable process for the people who are hurting the most. Because you want me to tell you why, Anthony?
Why is that?
I don't even know where you live and hang out, but you and I become the victims.
Mm-hmm.
We the ones that got to watch our backs when we go and get in our cars. We the ones that got to make sure you got some big German shepherd running around your dadgum yard so that people will think you at home. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
So while the system is playing with our market, that market has no place to react but back home with us. So I'm saying, as a tax-paying, loyal citizen, that we need to stop. Anthony, I'm going to have to get out of here, man. Thanks for calling in, okay?
Okay. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, brother. Take care.
Okay.
Peace, man. Like I said, gang, I don't want to be made out that I'm an angry black man, because I'm not. I love life. I love people. These two people sitting in the studio with me, they haven't grabbed sticks or stuff to defend themselves. So, you know, I'm not really that kind of person. But it needs to be said. I think it's okay for us to talk about it. I don't think anybody's going to hear me that matters, and then all of a sudden we're going to have some really glorious programs going out there. But for us and our thinking and how we're raising our kids, and what we're telling them to expect and look forward to, only we can do that. We have to be the ones that make sure that what needs to be heard is being heard, okay? Now, I'm going to get out of here. Mikeson gave me a couple of fingers up here for me to get ready to go. So I'm going to turn it over to him and Aaron so she can do our calendar. It's been a thrill, folks. I'll be back at you. Take care.
There are a few community events I'd like to highlight for today's show. The first takes place at Village Presbyterian Church of Prairie Village, Kansas. It's called Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream. It's on January 25th from 9 a.m. to 2:30. It'll be a global seminar on how to create a just, spiritual, fulfilling, and environmentally sustainable world. Next event is KC Arts Eco Village Project. They're having a potluck in January on Tuesday the 21st. They meet at 719 East 31st Street from 7:30 to 9:30 to discuss the possible eco village. And Seed Savers Kansas City is having their first seed library meeting February 4th, Tuesday from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Anita B. Gorman Discovery Center, which is at 47th and Troost. All of these events and others can be found on our Eco Radio KC Facebook page. Also, I posted a link for Green Ability, which is Kansas City Magazine, on green living here in our city. And I'd like to share a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He says, "Our lives begin, the end, the day, we become silent, and things that matter." Let me repeat that. "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." I think that's why it's important to stay informed so we can make informed decisions as individuals within our community. Eco Radio brings you the latest environmental news and events so we can be active participants in our community. So be sure to tune in every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Also, Sierra Club, the Kansas chapter, is having their 40th anniversary conference and planning the next 40. It's a one-day gathering of the Sierra Club members and leaders to enhance member activism and growth and educate ourselves on the issues. This takes place Saturday, March 8th, 2014, from 8:30 a.m. to 4:15 p.m. It's at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Topeka. You can find information on Sierra Club Kansas chapter's website.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. That does it just for our program. If you have not finished getting your green on, you can check out kdhx.org. That's the community radio station across the state in St. Louis. Their environmental program, Earthworms, starts at 7 o'clock. But you can certainly welcome to leave it here for Sabor Latino. A lot of great tunes coming up your way. We're going to close out now with a commentary by Amy Goodman done the other day on the Fukushima Democracy Now! Broadcast live for several days from Japan this past week. And here's what Amy has to say. Thanks, folks.
Fukushima, an ongoing warning to the world. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With my weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. This week, Dateline, Tokyo. I write these facts as dispassionately as I can in the hope that they will act as a warning to the world. So wrote the journalist Wilfred Burchett from Hiroshima. His story, headlined The Atomic Plague, appeared in the London Daily Express on September 5, 1945. Burchett violated the U.S. military blockade of Hiroshima and was the first Western journalist to visit that devastated city. He wrote, "Hiroshima does not look like a bomb city. It looks as if a monster steamroller had passed over it and squashed it out of existence." Jump ahead 66 years to March 11, 2011, and 600 miles north to Fukushima and the Great East Japan earthquake, which caused the tsunami. As we now know, the initial onslaught that left 19,000 people dead or missing was just the beginning. What began as a natural disaster quickly cascaded into a man-made one, as system after system failed at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. Three of the six reactors suffered meltdowns, releasing deadly radiation into the atmosphere and the ocean. 3 years later, Japan is still reeling from the impact of the disaster. More than 340,000 people became nuclear refugees, forced to abandon their homes and livelihoods. Filmmaker Atsushi Funahashi directed the documentary Nuclear Nation, The Fukushima Refugee Story. In it, he follows refugees from the town of Futaba, where the Fukushima Daiichi plant is based, in the first year after the disaster. The government relocated them to an abandoned school near Tokyo, where they live in cramped, shared common areas, many families to a room, and are provided three box lunches per day. I asked Funahashi what prospects these 1,400 people had.
There's none. Pretty much the only thing the government is saying is that at least 6 years from the accident, you cannot go back to your own town.
The nuclear refugees were given permits to return home to collect personal items, but only for 2 hours. Like Wilfred Burchett, Funahashi had to violate the government's ban on travel to a nuclear-devastated area in order to catch the poignant moments of one family's return on film. He explained how the family gave him one of their four permits to take the trip.
I tried to negotiate with the government, and they didn't give me any permission to go inside there. And any other independent journalists or documentary filmmakers didn't get the permission to go inside. But I got along very well with this family from Futaba, and they gave me, okay, maybe we go back in there, and then we got four permits, and then we are just using two. So why don't we come together?
He snuck back with the family on their short trip. The Japanese government's refusal to grant Funahashi access is indicative of another significant problem that's emerged since the earthquake, secrecy. Japan's conservative Prime Minister Shinzo Abe enacted a controversial state secrecy law early last December. Here in Tokyo, Sophia University professor Koichi Nakano says of the new law,
It, of course, concerns primarily security issues and anti-terrorist measures, but in the parliamentary exchange, it became increasingly clear that the interpretation of what actually constitutes state secret could be very arbitrary and rather freely defined by government leaders. And, for example, anti-nuclear citizen movements can come under surveillance without their knowledge, and arrests can be made.
Since the nuclear disaster, a forceful grassroots movement has grown to permanently decommission all of Japan's nuclear power plants. The Prime Minister at the time of the earthquake, Naoto Kan, explained how his position on nuclear power shifted.
My position before March 11, 2011, was that as long as we make sure that the safety it's safely operated. Nuclear power plant can be operated and should be operated. However, after experiencing the disaster of March 11th, I changed my thinking 180 degrees completely. You know, we do have accidents such as, say, airplane crash and so on, and sometimes hundreds of people die in an accident. But there is no other accident or disaster that would affect 50 million people. Maybe a war, but there is no other accident can cause such a tragedy.
The current Prime Minister, Shinzo Abe, leading the most conservative Japanese administration since World War II, wants to restart Japan's nuclear power plants despite overwhelming public opposition. Public protests outside Abe's official residence in Tokyo continue. The independent journalist Wilfred Burchett wrote, "It gives you an empty feeling in the stomach to see such man-made devastation." He wrote those words sitting in the rubble of Hiroshima in 1945. The two U.S. atomic bomb attacks on the civilian populations of Hiroshima and Nagasaki have deeply impacted Japan to this day. Likewise, the triple-edged disaster of the earthquake, tsunami, and ongoing nuclear disaster will last for generations. The dangerous trajectory from nuclear weapons to nuclear power is now being challenged by a popular demand for peace and sustainability. It is a lesson for the rest of the world as well. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan in Tokyo, Japan.
We're all connected, you and me, from the snow on a mountaintop to the fish in the bottom of the deep blue sea, all got that same kind of reciprocating, recirculating water-based chemistry, but we're all connected. Connected to the air which came from the plants who struggle to keep up with the smoke and the dust that we send them. We're connected to the water that comes from the sky and falls on the land and grows all the plants that bring us all the food that feeds us. Connected, connected, we trade places with the earth. Take a deep breath, tell me just how much that's worth. Has been a blessing, might end up a curse. Better clean it up now, cause it's getting worse. In our environment, can't tell them where to go and can't fence them in. But because we're connected, we take them in, make ourselves a victim. We're connected. You know, we're all connected.
mountaintop to the fish in the bottom of the deep blue sea. All got that same kind of reciprocating, recirculating water-based chemistry, but we're all connected. Climb to the top of the corporate tree. Act and believe that you're totally free. But body, mind, and spirit, we all seem to be connected.